Hello, hello, and welcome back to Santana's Nerd Flow Podcast. I'm your host and the captain of the ship, Santana. So we're back at it again. We're back to a long, long time ago and in a galaxy far, far away. We're talking about Star Wars once again. And this time, specifically, we're talking about the prequel era trilogy. We're talking about Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace. Let's get into it. And let's start off with that score by John Williams. Whew, man, another banger. The Duel of the Fates was the intro to this episode. That's probably the most popular song of all the Earth's, not song, but music, form of music score from the prequel trilogy, from Phantom Menace, Attack of the Clones, and Revenge of the Sith. The Duel of the Fates is probably what really got everyone hyped the most before the movie came out, and probably still gets everyone hyped the most after all three films came out. Because you got to remember, the last Star Wars film was Return of the Jedi in 1983, and this film came out in 1999. So you're looking at what, 16 years in the making. People have been waiting for a new Star Wars movie for about 16 years. It's wild. And when Duel of the Fates, when the score came out, this was the one that stood out the most. It was wild. It just got you hyped. It got you ready for the film. It still gets me hyped. Like, if I want to go work out, I'll put it on. Like, it still gets me hyped. Like I said, this movie came out in 1999. It was 16 years after the last Star Wars film. It had a budget of $115 million. And on its initial release in 1999, it made over $924.3 million. So that was just insane amount of money. Like, people were ready. People were hyped. People were watching this film over and over and over again. It was wild. And then it didn't quite hit a billion. But then when they re-released it later down the line, when was it, in like 2011, I want to say, and they come converted it to 3D, it made another $102.7 million. So it definitely eventually crossed $1 billion. And eventually it had $1.027 billion. So that 3D re-release gave it another a little over $100 million more to add to the total, which pushed it over that $1 billion mark. It's wild, man. Like, these Star Wars films, they just make so much money. People just love them so much and watch them over and over again. And behind the scenes, we got, of course, the great George Lucas coming back, and he's the writer, he's the director, he's the producer, he's just the godfather over all of everything Star Wars, especially when this film came back. He jumped right back into it. He's been working on it he's been working on it since the last film, since Return of the Jedi, just tinkering about the idea. And it was also produced by Rick McCollum. And we also have, let's look at the actual cast. We acquired a few people in the cast, and it was a pretty big cast. It was pretty good cast, I'm not gonna lie. So playing probably, I want to say he's probably the main character of the film. I mean, it's an ensemble film, but probably he gets the most screen time is Qui-Gon Jinn, Jedi Master Qui-Gon Jinn, played by the great Liam Neeson. And Liam Neeson can always play the great master type, the great sensei Sifu type. I mean, he done it in Star Wars, he's done it in Batman. You just believe that he's that great old wise master that can still kick your ass. Like I said, so Qui-Gon Jinn, played by Liam Neeson, and then we also get a younger Padawan version of Obi-Wan Kenobi, played by Ewan McGregor. We also have how old was he supposed to be in the film? 11 years old, I guess. Anakin Skywalker, played by Jake Lloyd. And spoilers, if you don't know Anakin is Darth Vader. Hey, I don't know who doesn't know that, but Anakin Skywalker eventually turned into Darth Vader. He falls to the dark side. So we also have playing the Queen Padme Amidala. We got Natalie Portman, and then also playing that role throughout the film is Keira Knightley, because she's actually the Queen's decoy, so they're interchangeable throughout this film. It would have been interesting if they kept on doing that throughout the trilogy, but definitely for sure in this first film, Natalie Portman is Queen Amidala, and Keira Knightley is forget her name, but she's her handmaiden and she's her decoy, and they keep flipping back and forth throughout the film. And we also have Kong, playing the Emperor, playing Sheev Palpatine, playing Darth Sidious himself, Ian McDiarmid, and he comes back. He was the original Emperor in 1983, and well, he wasn't the original. The original was actually like a monkey, like with a weird mask, but eventually when by Return of the Jedi, they had Ian McDiarmid in there playing the actual Emperor, and he came back for the prequels, and not for nothing, he also comes back for the sequel trilogy, so he's been in it throughout all three trilogies, so you gotta hand it to him. We also have playing the motion capture and the voice of Jar Jar Binks, we got Ahmed Best. We also have doing the actor and like the physical performance of Darth Maul. He's played by Ray Park. He only had like I think three lines in the whole film, and they were dubbed over by another actor, but the physical part of it, man, they got the perfect guy. Ray Park, boy, he is athletic, martial arts master. Like it's insane what he does throughout the film. We also have other returning characters from the original trilogy. We got Kenny Baker playing R2-D2. We got Anthony Daniels voicing C-3PO. We have newcomers. We have Samuel Jackson, boy, playing Mace Windu. Playing motherfucking Mace Windu. Sam Jackson in the Star Wars world. It was crazy at the time. We also have playing Smee Skywalker, Anakin's mom. We got Pernilla August. We got Chancellor Valorum. He's played by Terrence Stamp. Captain Panaka, played by Hugh Corsi. Warwick Davis is in the film. He has a couple different roles, a couple different cameos. He was from the original trilogy. And then we have the producer Rick McCollum in it as a Naboo Curio in a quick little cameo. There's a lot of characters, and we get a lot of new characters also. We have like the whole Jedi Council. We have it's just wild. It's a pretty big cast, and they're pretty much world building from this film for the whole trilogy here, for the whole prequel trilogy. But our main cast, I gotta say, is you got your Ian McGregor, Liam Neeson, Jake Lloyd, Natalie Portman, Ian McDiarmid, and Ray Park and Ahmed Best. That's probably like your main core cast for the film. And the prequel trilogy there, I mean, I grew up watching the original Star Wars trilogy, and I love them, and I also love the prequel trilogy, but the prequel trilogy are the Star Wars films that I grew up watching in the movie theaters, because these are the ones that came out that I were able to watch in the movie theaters, and I love them all. They get a lot of the prequel trilogy now. They've turned around. Like, it's kind of like a wild roller coaster ride with the prequel era films. Right when they came out, they were extremely loved. The Phantom Menace, like I said, people were watching this film over and over again. The people were watching like 20 times in the theaters. Like, it's wild. And then eventually people started to turn on the trilogy. They started sour on them, saying that it's not quite Star Wars. It's not like the originals. It's a little bit different. It's too clean. It's too much CGI, especially I want to say Attack of the Clones probably also. It's a lot of CGI. It's a good film, but it's a lot of CGI. But I think it turns around towards Revenge of the Sith. People still hate on it, but they definitely hate on it as not as much as they used to. And then now, since the sequel trilogy came out, a lot of people have come back and turned the new leaf with the prequel trilogy. They're starting to see that they're actually pretty, pretty fantastic films, especially the kids that grew up watching the prequel trilogies growing up. This is their trilogy. The same, like the older generation, the original trilogy was their trilogy. The prequel trilogy is the next generation's trilogy. And especially seeing the differences between the prequel trilogy and the new sequel trilogy, people definitely coming back and giving in a new look and looking at all the positives in these films. I mean, I understand it. It's not the same as the original trilogy. But like I said, I grew up watching these films in the theaters. I love all Star Wars. I really love the world building in Star Wars, the grand scheme of it all. I love it all. I love watching the Star Wars films, watching the cartoons, watching the TV shows, watching the playing all the video games, reading the books. It's my all-time favorite franchise, so I'm gonna like it regardless. Like I said, this film, The Phantom Menace, does still get a decent amount of hate on it, but it's a different story from the original. George Lucas, he didn't want to repeat the same exact story, and then people gave him so much hate on it, and then when the sequel trailer trilogy comes around, he repeats the story because he thought that's what people wanted, and then they give him hate on it anyway. So it's a lose-lose situation. You're never going to have that perfect spot, that perfect spot where it's just like the original classic trilogy. Hold that up so high in such a high pedestal, it's never gonna reach it. But like I said, this film has a lot of really, really good things in it. Like I said, just the CGI alone, it was groundbreaking for 1999 to have full motion capture characters, and one of them being a main character with Jar Jar Binks is wild. It was never done before, not to this effect. I mean, you had like stuff like Who Framed Roger Rabbit, stuff like that, but never.
Do you like video games, podcasts, and reminiscing? I'm actor, video game writer, and total sweetie pie, Connor Savage McCabe, and on each episode of Call Me By Your Game, I sit down with a guest for an intimate look at a special game from their past. Did you and your dad beat Spyro the Dragon over the holidays? Or was Halo 4 the one thing that united your roommates during your senior year of college? Stories like these are what Call Me By Your Game is about. From video game content creator Janet Garcia to Hades voice actor Courtney Vinaes, I interview wonderful comedians and game industry friends about these memories. Check us out wherever you get your podcasts, and maybe someday you'll call me by your game.
Not quite photorealistic, but you definitely believe like that's just another character in the film, and it's a fully CGI character. And if it wasn't for this film and other films that from this trilogy, you wouldn't have stuff like a couple years later where you have Gollum, Sméagol in Lord of the Rings, full capture, motion capture abilities that they have. George Lucas, and he didn't create it, but he definitely perfected it. He definitely pushed it to the next level. And then when Lord of the Rings came out, they pushed it even farther. But without the work that George Lucas put into it, like we definitely wouldn't have got there as fast as we did. And not just that, but like more of the technology that George Lucas created just for this film alone, like we still use in movies today. And not for nothing, like most of the film still looks pretty good. Like right now, we're in 2024. This film came out in 1999, and I watched it on a 4K TV, on a 75-inch 4K TV HDR, and it looks really good. There's a couple of spots that look a little bit dated, like the big battle between the droids and the Gungans, because that's completely CGI. But for the most part, it still holds up pretty good, I'm not gonna lie. Especially like the pod racing part of the movie, probably one of the best parts of the movie. A lot of people, that's their favorite part of this film, the whole pod racing scene. It's incredible. It really is, especially the designs of all the pod racers and their pods, and especially the sound design. Like it's wild. I believe like in an interview, George Lucas said he wanted that part of the film to be able to watch without any dialogue, and you can still just feel it. Like you still understand what's going on. It's incredible. It really is. Especially if you have a nice surround sound system. Like you feel the engines, you feel that sound, you feel the earth shaking, like, or not the earth, they're in Tatooine. It's really, really, it's a big highlight of the film. It really is. It's long, and don't get me wrong, it's a long race, it's three laps, but it's really, really good. Like I said, that's a lot of people's favorite part of the film in it. And not for nothing, it did have a couple of video games like Star Wars Pod Racer that was extremely popular because of it. I know I had it. I had it for I think N64, we had it. Me and my brothers, we used to play it. Yeah, it's really good. And then like throughout the, you gotta remember, this isn't the classic trilogy. This isn't when the rebellion is like getting stomped on trying to fight back. This is the Jedi at their strongest. Maybe not at their strongest, but at their highest. At their highest, they believe they're on top of everything. They haven't had to deal with like any major foes for a long time. They defeated the Sith 1,000 years ago. So really, they haven't had like any big enemies. They're just being like peacekeepers, basically. basically security guards for the galaxy, you know, and for the Republic. So they were kind of blinded by what was happening behind the scenes. So it was the perfect time for the Emperor to start making moves to take over. I mean, it was a great plan by the Emperor behind the scenes. He was playing all sides against each other and gambling on himself. And at the end of the day, he won the game. If you want to talk about like Game of Thrones type, like the Emperor won the Game of Thrones when it comes to Star Wars, boy. And it was really cool to see Jedi's basically in their prime, because in the original trilogy you have Luke, he's a new Jedi, just a little bit of training. You have Obi-Wan, he's an old Jedi who hasn't been training for a good while, 10 years at least, I want to say. You have Yoda, who also hasn't been training for at least 20 years. And then you have Darth Vader, he's more machine than man. And the Emperor, he doesn't fight with lightsabers anymore. He just uses the Force. So it was really cool to start to see, get a little sample of what the Jedi really were back in the day. Even the Sith as well, with Darth Maul, especially like the tag team, you know, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan. Like, you can see what a true master and apprentice pairing is, master and Padawan pairing is. There's a couple times where they just know what to do. It's instinct. They work together. They fought together. They trained together so long. They just know how to fight together. It's really cool. And we're not fighting stormtroopers, we're fighting droids, so they can go all out. They're cutting these fools in half, heads off, arms off, so you can really see like how badass the Jedi were back in the day. So there's a lot of positives to this film. Like I said, I don't know why. I mean, I see why people hate on it, because it's different from the originals, but there is definitely a lot of positives. Like I said, you have the pod race, you get to see Jedi's basically in their prime, you get to see a young Obi-Wan Kenobi, not quite the master yet, but he has a master. You can see what his master was like, and his master Qui-Gon, he was basically a rebel himself. Like, he should have been on the Jedi Council, but he always went against the Council. He did his own thing. He is always on the side of good, but he did his own thing. So you can see where Obi-Wan gets a little bit of rebellious nature in him, and eventually that's what he teaches to Luke, and eventually down the line. You know, that's really cool seeing a true pairing of master and Padawan. And then also, like, probably my favorite part of the film is really at the end of the film, in the third act, with the different endings going on, the different battles. I believe it was four different battles going on at the end of the film. Because like in A New Hope, you had the Death Star run, you had like one big epic scene going on. In Empire Strikes Back, you have Luke versus Vader, and then you have the rest of the gang trying to escape from Cloud City. So you have two different scenes going on simultaneously. And then in Return of the Jedi, you have once again Luke versus Vader. You also have the new Death Star run, and then you also have the battle going on in the Ewok homeland. So that's three battles going on. They upped it to four battles in this film. So you have, like I said, you have the Gungans versus the droids. You have Padme Amidala trying to retake over her castle. You have what other battles did you have? There was the space battle with Anakin taking on the Trade Federation main ship. And then you have probably my favorite part of the whole film is Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul, baby. That lightsaber battle of the ages, boy. I mean, this was wild. The only thing that really, I guess, upsets me now is that they kind of spoiled it in the commercial with Darth Maul having the double-bladed lightsaber. Oh, man. But still, it was pretty badass. And Darth Maul, he's the apprentice to the Emperor. He's the apprentice to Darth Sidious. So he's been training basically his whole life just to fight and kill Jedis. He's been training in secrecy. Finally, we get to see it. I mean, we had the little mini skirmish with Qui-Gon and Darth Maul on Tatooine. Where Qui-Gon was just trying to hold him back till he can jump onto his ship. Then at the end of the film, this epic lightsaber duel was incredible. Darth Maul opens, the door opens, and Darth Maul is there. He takes off the mask, opens up the lightsaber, double-bladed, and then Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, they whip out their lightsabers. They're like, all right, we got this. And the queen's like, all right, we'll take the long way. It was just an incredible, incredible fight. This is what we were dreaming of as kids, like when we're thinking of Jedi versus Sith, when we're playing for our toys and stuff, or even with the video games. Like, this is what we imagined Star Wars would be, but at least lightsaber dueling wise. And boy, they brought it. Boy, like I said, Ray Park, he's the perfect guy to play Darth Maul, man, because he was all over the place. He's fighting two Jedis with the double-bladed lightsaber. We've never seen a double-bladed lightsaber before. It's wild, man. It is wild. And they're moving so fast. Like, it's incredible. Like I said, you have the four different battles going on, but this is probably the main one that really got everyone's focus. It was good. They're fighting, like, in the big cavern of bridges with the lasers going up and down. They fought in that the shield hallway where they got separated. And it's pretty cool to see, like, three different mentalities when they're all separated in three different compartments. You have Darth Maul, he's on the outside part and he's like testing the shield to see if he can get in. You have Obi-Wan all the way in the back part and he's just restless. He's pacing back and forth trying to get back in the fight. Then you have Qui-Gon, who just sits down calmly and meditates and rebuilds his energy, getting ready to continue the fight. So it's pretty cool to see the differences in their styles. And then eventually you get to just Qui-Gon versus Darth Maul for a little bit. A lot of people have a big complaint with this, with why didn't Obi-Wan use his super speed to get from point A to point B to join the fight, like they did at the beginning of the film where they got away from the Droidicas. You got to remember, like, at the beginning of the film, they weren't really fighting. They just got out of the room. They fought a couple droids and they had their stamina up, so they're able to run away. But on this fight, they've been fighting Darth Maul for a little bit. They've been going at it for a little bit, so they're not at their peak stamina. So even if he tried, he probably wouldn't even made it to the end, because they're using their force. They're using the force. They use the force, but they also use the force to fight. So they're kind of like, if you look at it like a video game wise, like you have your health bar, you have your force bar. Force bar was drained out. That's why, like I said, Qui-Gon sitting there meditating, he's rebuilding his force in a way. And Obi-Wan, he's just pacing back and forth, ready to come back into it. So you gotta remember, like, they've been fighting for a little bit, so he's not gonna have that super speed like right away. It takes a little bit. And you also remember he did a couple giant jumps like earlier in the fight, so he is a little bit stamina drained. I understand why people say, oh, they should have just used the super speed, but there is logic behind it why he didn't use it. But getting back to the fight, yeah, the one-on-one Qui-Gon versus Darth Maul. Qui-Gon held his own, man. He's the older master, and Darth Maul is the young new apprentice. But Darth Maul was able to take him, took him with the two-bladed lightsaber. He Qui-Gon couldn't stop him. He gets stabbed in the chest. And you see Obi-Wan just going off in rage, screaming. He has to wait. Darth Maul's just taunting him. He's walking around Qui-Gon's body, just trying to egg him on more. And the rage is just building up inside Obi-Wan. So when the force field opens up, he comes out guns blazing. He taps into the dark side for a little bit. He's able to send Darth Maul packing for a little bit, sending him stepping backward. He gets the advantage. He breaks Darth Maul's lightsaber, so Darth Maul is down to just a single-bladed lightsaber. But the problem with the rage and the dark side, it just takes over. Darth Maul is able to focus and get the upper hand back, and he's able to knock Obi-Wan down like a big shaft type thing. Like all these Star Wars places, ships, castles, they all have these open, bottomless shafts. So he's able to get the upper hand back. So then Obi-Wan's able to refocus. He calms himself down, able to refocus and jump out of the dark side. Because you got to remember, he's been trained. He's a Jedi Padawan, like a true Padawan. He's been Padawan for at least 10 years. And he's had a good master with Qui-Gon teaching him. And before that, Yoda. So he's able to control his rage, bring himself back to the light side. And he's able to eventually focus and get out of the little hole, jump over Darth Maul and cut him in half, even though Darth Maul had the high ground, which will come into effect in Revenge of the Sith. But it I'll get into it when we get to that film. Obi-Wan's able to jump over him and cut him in half and drop him down, and Darth Maul falls down the shaft. And at the moment, we thought, damn, that was the end for Darth Maul. He would have been a badass bad guy, but for this film, he was, and oh well. But in the eventually, like in the Clone Wars cartoons and Rebels, he does come back at, because he's able to concentrate on the dark side of the Force and use all his hatred to stay alive. And at first he gets like a spider body like for the bottom half, to eventually he does get like some robotic legs, and he's able to come back, and he's quite essential behind the scenes during the Clone Wars and during Star Wars Rebels, until eventually Obi-Wan does kill him again in a one-on-one battle on Tatooine. But as far as people who just watched the films, we just saw a pretty badass villain go down. But he went down swinging, I'm not gonna lie. It was an excellent lightsaber duel. Like I said, overall, this is a really good film. I see why people hate on it, but I really don't understand it. Like, there are a lot of good stuff in this film. Like I said, you get to see the Jedis in their prime. You get to see a young Obi-Wan with his master. You get to see a freaking fantastic badass lightsaber duel. You get to see this updated technology with the CGI, where we can see so much more on the screen. It was really cool. I mean, people hate on the it's a political film. I mean, it's a film. It's like George Lucas wanted to do something different than just rebels attacking the big evil empire. He wanted to do something different, to see how it fell apart for the Republic, how it turned into the Empire, and it all came from politics, I guess, and an evil guy scheming behind the scenes. You get to see young Anakin Skywalker, where he came from. I know George Lucas said originally he was going to be older. He's going to be like 16, 17, but he decided to age him down. So losing his mom would really get to him, really like start pushing him to the dark side. But you feel it more as a little kid, like 10, 11 year old, than you do when you're older, because you're already starting to get your own life going. But when you're a kid, that's super traumatic to you. So you can see like the he's starting to fall to the dark side. You see the path that's going to lead him to the dark side, and you get to see, like I said, you see the young Anakin Skywalker, because you can see that he was a he really is a hell of a pilot, because just from the pod race alone, he's able to win this crazy ass race with a bunch of aliens, and they're doing wild underhanded tricks and stuff. People are dying left and right, and he's able to win it. He's able, with a lot of setbacks, he's able to come back and win it. That's cool. You see Luke and Leia's mom with Padme, because eventually, spoilers, Anakin and Padme, they get together, and they're the parents of Luke and Leia. You get to see the wise Jedi Council, or the so-called wise Jedi Council, because even Qui-Gon, he wasn't with it. He's like, y'all fools, you're out of touch. Like, we got to get with the times. And they're stuck in the past because they've been sitting so high. They've been on their high horse for like 1,000 years, basically. Even Yoda, he's almost 900, so he's been up there. He's been on the winning team for a long ass time. And you can see like where the downfall starts to come, where they don't see what's going on, and their pride is just blinding them. And you can see like even when Qui-Gon brings Anakin to get tested by them, so they can decide if he can get trained, and he's acing their tests. And they're showing him like pictures behind the screen. He's just knows. He's like, oh, spaceship, cup, lightsaber, spaceship, another spaceship. Like, without even trying. And then they're like, Qui-Gon asks, so you can train him? And Mace Windu, like a dick, he's like, nah, we ain't training that fool. He's too old. Get his ass out of here. Like, Qui-Gon's like, what? And then even Anakin, like a little 11-year-old kid, like, you son of a bitch. Like, give him this look, like, and Mace Windu just give me a look back, like, bitch, please, what? Like, and even in right there, you can see like Anakin starting to lose trust in the Jedi. He really only trusts like Qui-Gon, and I guess Obi-Wan and Padme, but like truly, he really only trusts Qui-Gon. He saved him from being a slave. He brought him to get trained. And when the Jedi Council, they're just like, nah, we ain't training this boy. He's way too old. You can see the distrust starts to form with Anakin. And even that scene alone is actually pretty funny, because before that scene, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan talking to each other, and Obi-Wan's telling Qui-Gon, like, yo, like, really? Like, why do we bring this kid over here? Like, they're not gonna train him. He's too old. Like, really? Like, why? If you just follow what the council says, you'd be on the council. And Qui-Gon's like, dude, shut your mouth. Like, you're pretty good, but you're not, you still got a lot to learn. So just shut your mouth. And Obi-Wan's like, all right, you're right, master. And like the very next scene, they're like, oh, we need to train Anakin. And they're like, no. And Qui-Gon's like, all right, I'll train Anakin. Obi-Wan's ready. He's ready to go. And Obi-Wan looks at him like, what the hell? You just said I wasn't ready. But he goes along with it. He's like, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready. I can do it. That always cracked me up. Qui-Gon's like, man, fuck it. Like, I'll train him. Forget Obi-Wan. Like, it's too important right now. We have to train Anakin. It always made me laugh. But like I said, Obi-Wan took it with stride. He was like, all right, yeah, I'm ready. I'm ready to go. Let's do it. But the council, they said, we'll hold off on that decision. We'll go take care of what's going on Naboo. We see what's going on with the Trade Federation. And then we'll decide after. And eventually, like I said, Qui-Gon dies. And on his dying last words, he makes Obi-Wan promise him to train Anakin. And Obi-Wan's like, well, I guess, like, if that's what you want. So it's kind of, you don't have that full connection between Obi-Wan and Anakin yet. It's kind of, he just feels like he has to do it because that's what his master wanted him to do. I know, like, seen a lot of behind the scene footage and looking like original drafts, that a lot of the Qui-Gon Jyn scenes, like on Tatooine and Naboo, wasn't going to have Qui-Gon. It was just going to be Obi-Wan, and Qui-Gon wasn't going to jump into the picture till they reach Coruscant, when they eventually get there, like halfway through the film. So a lot of the buildup would have been with Obi-Wan and Anakin, but George Lucas changed it. I guess when you have someone of the caliber of Liam Neeson, you got to put him in there. Like, he has to be the master. So, but I think it works out for the film, because you have the reluctant master, the reluctant Jedi master with the obligation to train the so-called chosen one, because his master asked him to do it while he was dying. So you do have a little bit of a disconnect there. So it's kind of like a seed there, a little seedling of they really not supposed to be together, Obi-Wan and Anakin. But and then eventually down the line, it really goes, I mean, they do get together. They do become eventually like brothers, not really a father-son relationship, but more like a big brother, younger brother relationship, with Qui-Gon being the father that they both lost. So Obi-Wan had to step into that role. So like at the end of the day, it does work out. It does make sense. And you can feel the bitterness form between them by the end of Revenge of the Sith, I want to say. So like I said, it really is a good film. And being the first Star Wars film for 16 years, like, just the updated special effects and graphics and sound design and world building and scene, like Jedi's in their prime, the Republic when it's still in their prime before the Empire took over. I mean, there is a lot of good stuff in this film. I really do love this film. I mean, I do have a bias for it because I love all the Star Wars films. I love anything Star Wars, like even the crap, like even the Boba Fett show, the Book of Boba Fett, which is truly not that good. I still love it. Like, so I'm a little bit biased towards it, but I do see that it does have its flaws. But you gotta remember, it's the first one in 16 years. It's building for a new trilogy. They're changing a lot of things up, and it also has to eventually fit in with the classic trilogy, with A New Hope, with eventually with Rogue One. You have to build your own thing and then build into what's already there. So George Lucas had a pretty hefty job to do, and I think he did a pretty good job with what he had, what he had to do. I mean, overall, if I were to give it a rating, I always give all the Star Wars 10 out of 10s. But to be realistic, like with what came before it, with New Hope, Empire, and Jedi, I do hold those three a little bit higher. But this definitely, it's like right behind it. If all those are 10 out of 10, this one for me is a 9 out of 10. Like it's up there. And this is the first Star Wars film that I saw. Like, no, not the first Star Wars film I saw in theaters. I did watch, what was it, New Hope and Empire, I believe, in theaters when they re-released it. But the first new Star Wars film I saw in the movie theaters was Phantom Menace. It was cool. It was really cool. I got to see it with my brothers and my dad, who got me into Star Wars. So it was really a special time for me. I really, really have fond memories of watching this in the movie theaters. It's good stuff. Like I said, I see why people hate on it. I don't really agree with all the hate. It's a really good film, and definitely, I suggest everyone gives it a shot. Especially if you already seen the originals, or even if you haven't seen the originals, you haven't seen any Star Wars. You start off with Episode One, The Phantom Menace, and work your way through. It's a true story from beginning to the end. If you get all the way to Episode Nine with Rise of Skywalker, you do see a story from beginning to end throughout nine films. And if you add Rogue One and Solo and all the TV shows, you definitely do see a huge, incredible story going on. But like I said, definitely I would say give it a shot. Definitely give it a try. I'm always going to advocate for people to watch Star Wars, because I love it, and I think everyone else should love it. But talking about that, it seems like it's that time again. It seems like this Millennium Falcon has returned to the dock. So as always, ladies and gentlemen, guys and gals, thank you for listening, and I'll catch you on the next one. Have a good one.
I have a bad feeling about this.
I don't sense anything.